This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Let's see, Jubilee Street there from Nick Cave's fantastic Push the Sky Away album. I just have to mention that so I got a little obsessed with things that I've seen that were kind of awesome. And a couple of years, was it about 2 years ago, I guess, we saw Nick Cave. My wife and I went to Louisville and saw Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. And it was astonishing. I can't recommend it highly enough to anybody. And it's hard to say why exactly. For us, it's a little easier to say why. And that would be because at a certain point in the show, Nick Cave stepped off the stage onto seat backs and walked directly to us, like 18 rows back. Which was like, it was like a wild animal was coming towards us, kind of. He's this incredible sort of animal charisma. And he walked straight to us. And then at a certain point, I had one of my hands on Nick Cave's, wait for it, well-polished shoe. And the other hand on his back, like, I was, it's cool, Nick, I've got you. Don't worry, you won't fall down. While everybody's losing their minds. So anyway, if you get a chance to see Nick Cave, he doesn't come to the United States a lot, but I can't recommend it highly enough. And let's see, before that, I think we heard some Brian Ferry. Brian Ferry with, It's All Over Now, Baby Blue, from his album Frantic, one of the many Bob Dylan covers that Brian Ferry, the lead singer of Roxy Music, has done. It seems weird that that one of the great crooners of our time, who sang for the ultra, ultra polished Roxy Music, is a huge, huge Bob Dylan fan and has recorded, I think, at least two albums entirely of Bob Dylan songs, and he does them so well. Brian Ferry's going to be at the Ryman Theater in Nashville on Tuesday. I'm very happy that I'm going to be there too. So I don't like go out and see shows a lot. I know it seems like I do, maybe, because I went to see Paul McCartney 2 weeks ago. But after this, I'm sort of done going to see, you know, definitely big shows. I was thinking about this the other day, like shows in giant arenas and stuff. Usually, I don't know that there's that much point to it a lot of the time. But, you know, unless it's you're just interested in sort of soaking in the sweat and carbon dioxide of a whole lot of other people. Paul McCartney, I was willing to make an exception for, and that was a smart move. Anyway, what am I talking about? This is Mick. You're listening to Trivial Thursdays here on WRFL. Happy to be with you, and happy in a little bit for to have some guests coming in the second hour of the show. Eons from now, we're going to have a visit with Griff and Sarah Wiley Van Meter. They're going to be here, and we're going to talk about all kinds of things, I suspect, although they think we're just talking about The Seer, which is the Wendell Berry documentary that's screening tonight at the Kentucky, but we've got other things to talk about, too. Exciting Lexington things, I think. And then here in just a few minutes, I'm delighted to get to visit with some of the organizers of the Kentucky Heartwood Music Festival, the 11th annual one, including some live fiddle music on the air. So won't you please stick around for that? It occurs to me that, I do have something here. Okay, that's good. So let's see. I woke up this morning with an enormous amount of excitement over the fact that we nominated, that a major U.S. political party nominated not just a woman to run for as the candidate for president, but extremely, extremely qualified woman. So just to be clear, regardless of your there's a lot of strong feelings out there and a lot of strong sentiments about that. And that's fine. But you got to understand that we nominated a woman. It only took 270 years or something. I don't know. I can't do my math very well. It's not that long. 250 years close. So, you know, Sri Lanka, 50 years ahead of us on this, okay? Anyway, so, you know, whenever you, find yourself moved for, you know, Hillary bashing, just remember it's taken us a long time to get here. And also remember that the person that we're talking about is wildly qualified, regardless of your opinion of how she may have behaved here or there. She is nonetheless wildly qualified for the job. That's my little speech. I'm not giving it on Facebook because I don't want to do battle with a bunch of knuckleheads. So, yes, I use the airwaves in a one-way personal little thing. And Paul McCartney and Wings there with Jet. This is Mick. You're listening to Trivial Thursdays. I'm here with Chris Schimmler. Hi, Chris. How you doing?
Hey, how are you? It's great to be here.
Nice to see you.
You too.
Thanks for coming out. Did you catch the spectacular? Let's see. Now, did you come from Berea?
No, I came from north of Frankfurt out in the woods. That's where I live.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you catch all I know is this morning I was awoken to a spectacular thunder and lightning clap. I don't know if any of that happened.
It was all around us. Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Our rain barrel was full this morning.
So woo!
It's good not to water the garden.
So let's see. We haven't seen each other in a little while. You are the are you the director? No.
You know, I was for many years, but I'm on the council. Yeah, I'm a volunteer.
Of Kentucky Heartwood. Yeah. So in Kentucky Heartwood, kind of a we've had an ongoing fondness. I've had an ongoing fondness for Kentucky Heartwood that dates back to the days of Perrin DeYoung.
That's right.
Not to speak of him as if he were deceased.
Yeah, practicing law in North Carolina, not in Kentucky.
Yeah, I know. Maybe we'll get him back sometime. But
he became a coordinator of Kentucky Heartwood after me. I recruited him out of Berea College. And then he was an awesome defender of the forest for several years.
Yes, he was.
And then wanted to get his law degree so he could defend the environment. And we tried to keep him here in Kentucky, but he moved south.
Well, right, and as I recall, there was just he was having some trouble finding kind of the right gig, because he wanted to use that super sharp lawyer sort of his for the causes of good, basically, and not that you can't do that here, but I don't know, there was some sort of he was having trouble finding the right gig, right?
Yeah,
Now, I mean, Kentucky Heartwood dedicated to I don't know, progressive causes, and in particular. Kentucky Heartwood kind of came about. Would you explain how? Because there's sort of a particular tract of land that Kentucky Heartwood came about over. Is that true or not?
It is true. So in the late 80s, the U.S. Forest Service was really logging the Daniel Boone National Forest heavily. Partially because the forest had rebounded from the logging at the turn of the last century, and it was the marketable timber again, and they were cutting it down, and a group of citizens started becoming alarmed at the high logging rates, and led to the formation of Kentucky Heartwood and a regional network of forest organizations all across the central hardwood region called Heartwood.
Mm-hmm.
So we formed to educate ourselves about what we could do to stop the logging, and ended up being fairly wildly successful in the 90s. I mean, by 1998, we'd stopped all logging on the Daniel Boone National Forest. They'd stopped. The ban lasted for 4 years.
This is now, there's a couple things I want to say about this, because I've been sort of personally involved with you all sometimes in vague ways that will stay vague, especially where a parent is concerned. But one of the things that, so you guys, for anyone who's like who loses heart in no pun intended, who loses heart in sort of in progressive causes, Kentucky Heartwood is really, you guys have had some major victories. And I remember talking to Perrin about this. Perrin would be a great person for me to go to and be like, you know, just like, I don't know, Perrin, the world's just, we're doomed. And he would have a really great way of being like, okay, look, you know, we basically, the short version of being, we win some, we lose some. But we're definitely winning some, and he had a great way, and I feel like you guys have a great way of, like, you know, kind of keeping everything, just sort of keeping things moving forward, you know, and don't get too hangdog over the losses. Let's look at the wins.
Yeah, and the lesson is that if you truly care about something and go out there and work hard to defend it or protect it or advocate for it, you can make a difference in the world. I mean, we, you know, a group of just a handful of people from Kentucky with some support regionally, going out there learning the law and demanding that our public servants, the Forest Service, follow the law. And, you know, we found that they weren't. And, you know, our lawsuits with pro bono attorneys, you know, stopped them in their tracks and shocked them. And they're still recovering from that. I mean, they still, although we are coping right now with, you know, some ongoing and pretty nasty timber sales, you know, the level that they were logging, 44, 45 million board feet a year, about 10,000 full log trucks a year. You know, it's never reached those high levels again, because they know we're out there watching them and demanding that they, you know, that they be accountable to the environmental laws that are put in place to protect the forest.
Well, and then so there's two things that I remember, a couple sort of watershed moments that I remember hearing. And one of them was, it may have been you guys. I don't know if it was Perrin or you all, but like, somebody talked to kind of a major, you know, a congressman, a major lawmaker, I think from West Virginia, who basically said, you guys have basically won. you know, we're our efforts to do what you don't want us to do are kind of over, not forever, but like basically in this situation, you all have pretty much won just by kind of sticking to your guns.
Yeah, and most recently in Western Kentucky at Land Between the Lakes, also public land that we've been involved in, you know, Kentucky Heartwood has helped the Between the Rivers communities and other folks out there just dismantle the Pisgah Bay timber sale, a pretty major timber sale, 4,000 acres and many thousands of other acres affected by pre-commercial cutting and burning. Just, you know, take it down and then continue from there and demand that the entire plan be revisited. And now we're in the process of working with those folks to write some legislation with Congressman Whitfield to protect much of LBL from commercial logging.
So. Chris Schimmler is here from Kentucky Heartwood. And we're getting around to talking about your ongoing music festival, but I always like to cover some of these bases about Heartwood, because the work that you all do, I think, is venerable at this point. When did Heartwood? You said Heartwood started in the 90s.
You know, next year will be 25.
Okay. and I remember one of the first things that I learned about Kentucky Heartwood that kind of surprised me, and I believe surprises many, many people, is that the Forestry Service is
logging our public land.
It's an entity that requires some, you know, it's not just the most obvious thing in the world, but yeah, the Forestry Service is a giant logger in some ways, or can be.
Yeah, it's quite unfortunate. Unlike the park system, which is preserved for future generations and not for commodity extraction, U.S. Forest System, National Forest System, is designed to provide multiple uses to the citizens of the United States. And unfortunately, if there are not strong voices advocating for those amenities that don't have their own voice and dollars to pass to congressmen to create laws amenable to logging, such as the voices of biodiversity and big trees and clean forests and recreation, clean streams, you know, then the logging and the mining and the other industrial uses become a disproportionate share of that multiple use component of the national forest. So, yeah, we stand up for the wild parts of the forest that, you know, we believe that national forests are more appropriately used for those rather than for extraction.
Mm-hmm. Chris Schimmler here from Kentucky Heartwood. I tell you what, let's take a musical break, and we're going to come back with a special guest. Right? And some live music on the show. This is Trivial Thursdays on WRFL. This song always seems appropriate. Oh, that's very nice. Natalie Dufour here in the studio. Hi, Natalie.
Hello.
Raise that mic up so we can talk to you. At the age of 12, are you taller than your mom yet?
Not yet, but pretty soon.
Chris Schimmler is here from Kentucky Heartwood, and she has brought her daughter Natalie in. Natalie, who just played, could I call that a reel? No.
I don't know. It's called a fiddle. Income a Bee.
Income a Bee?
Yeah.
I was going to call it a reel. I don't know if it is or not. But a fiddle tune.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, how long have you been playing fiddle? Do you play fiddle or violin?
It's fiddle, but there's not much difference, but...
It's always a fun question to ask,
yeah. I'm playing for 5 years.
5 years, that's all?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I think I always think of fiddle as being the hardest instrument to make a pleasant sound on. I want my hats off to any parent for the beginning, for that painful beginning of their child's fiddling career.
We live right down the road from John Harrod. He's a master fiddler, and we can ride our bikes to his house. So it's been a real fun way to get fiddle in.
Well, I'll say. Yeah. That's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Let's see. So, by the way, we're joined by Leif Erickson.
Hello. Here. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Leif, who shows up from time to time, and we have to let him in. We gave him keys. It was a mistake to give him keys, but after the government budget cuts, we can't get the locks changed.
And when I get laid off from my teaching job, I'm going to come here full time, just so you know.
Well, and we'll double your pay.
I'm like Dracula. Once you invite me in, that's it.
So, let's see. So, now, Natalie, so... what do you remember the initial appeal of a fiddle for you? Was there one, or did your parents say, no, you're going to play this?
No, I think I wanted to play fiddle mainly because my best friend played fiddle. And so she sounded, you know, cool. Well, what I thought, she just started, but I thought it sounded cool. So I decided I wanted to play fiddle too.
Okay. So. That sounds pretty good.
Well, you know, children often have to be stopped from playing musical instruments, actually. The educational theorist John Holt says that, like, children will pick up, like an adult, you hand them an instrument and they go, I've never played that. I don't know what to do. But children will just do it.
Oh, I see. So adults, you're saying, won't.
Yeah, adults are more self-conscious, but uh-huh. Children are like, oh, a thing I can play with, which is really how you should start a kid with an instrument. Right, is just play with it and become comfortable with it. And in fact, I was reading yesterday in some trivia news, since it's Trivial Thursday, that kids will do anything for music. In 1969, the police in Moscow were reporting that people, the youth, as Fred Gwynn said in My Cousin Vinny, the youths of Moscow were dismantling phone booths to use parts to make electric guitars. In 1969, this was a report from the Moscow police.
That's pretty awesome. That has to do with the Beatles. It has to have to do with the Beatles.
Yeah, it was because of the Beatles' influence. So they started noticing all these phone booths were not working. It's because there was a certain transistor or something, the English professor says, knowing nothing about electronics. But anyway, something in it contributed to electronic guitar stuff. So you actually have to try hard to keep kids from instruments. And once they get a hold of it, and obviously talented like Natalie, then they take off.
Well, unfortunately, violin requires no parts from phone booths, right? And it can be appropriated from orchestras, which are considered to be more sort of reputable music in many parts of the world. So, and you can turn it to the whims of folk and mountain music. Yeah.
But if you start being reputable, people will expect it of you, so be careful.
So, you said one of your friends played fiddle, and
she still plays fiddle.
Yeah.
And she's just picked up guitar.
Do a lot of your friends play musical instruments?
Not many.
Yeah.
I think just Phoebe, but yeah.
I think it's I keep thinking about, like, how, I mean, popular music is, everybody's got, you know, if you're younger especially, you're like, yeah, man, this is my jam, you know, or your favorite song or whatever. But you're like, yeah, this is my jam, and I can play it, as opposed to just singing along to it.
You know, her friend is Phoebe Wagner, who is appears in the documentary Seer that Wendell Berry is in, since she's a farm girl, and they quoted her on what life is like in a farm. So she will be showing at the Kentucky Theater tonight. So.
Well, you just might want to stick around then and have a word with Griffin and Sarah Wiley Van Meter, who are going to be here talking about that in just a little bit, as well as the filmmakers by film. So yeah, well, how about that? And that is tonight, by the way, the screening of this year, the premiere, I believe, of this year, the Wendell Berry documentary, which is supposedly, they keep doing one of those things where, like, it's not really a documentary about Wendell Berry, but it is. It says so right there on the thing. I'll tease them about that later. So let's see. So Natalie, if I'm not mistaken, you're going to be playing at
the music festival,
at the Heartwood Music Festival.
Yes.
Now, the Heartwood Music Festival has been going on for some time now.
Yeah, we're in our 11th year, so we always have lots of fun. It keeps growing, and it was meaningful for me to bring my daughter in today because she's basically grown up with the festival, and you know, she was one when I started organizing it, and now she's competing in the kids' competition, and it's just really fun to see.
Wow. So the kids' competition, what's that like? Is it pretty cutthroat?
It's fun.
So like, so what is it? Is it fiddle or is it?
Oh,
what
it's
is it?
Any musical instrument. Uh-huh. There's pianos. I think this is the first year we're having a banjo.
Okay.
There was an accordion last year.
So, and you can play. What are you going to play? Can you say, or you keep that to yourself?
I'm going to play Jenny's Waltz.
Okay. Okay. Which I might make you play in a few minutes.
is Jenny okay with that? Dirty if you trick. Ask Jenny if you can play your waltz. Okay, she's kind of you know, choosy about who plays her waltz, so you just might want to talk to her first. Okay,
how do you find new stuff to play? Is it does that have a lot to have to do with your teacher or
my teacher? And sometimes he gave me these files of different old fiddlers, and so I listened to those and learned tunes off that.
Are there daunting qualities about playing fiddle? Do you ever hear something you're like, I can't play that?
Yes. I just went to this Cowan Creek Mountain Music School.
Okay.
In Whitesburg. And
yeah, I love it there.
There was this one tune. Oh, gosh. It was very hard.
You feel a sense of accomplishment when you learn to play these things, I take it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still have a sense of relief. That one, so
you got to have room to grow, though, you know. So you got to have another challenge ahead of you. That's a good thing.
So what else is going on? The music festival. Let's give some of the details.
We do all sorts of fun things. It's this Saturday from 3 to 10 at the Millville Community Center.
Right. The Millville is
rural Millville. It's about half an hour from Lexington.
So you mean like the outskirts of Millville, or
isn't it all outskirts?
Millville is the outskirts of Frankfurt, basically.
There you go.
There you go. And we've got let's see, what are some of the fun things? Kids street theater, a chalk drawing competition, an obstacle course, sports competition, a square dance, the kids music competition. We break that up into two categories, ages 8 to 12 and 13 to 18, give prizes and all that. And of course, bands and a kids parade.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's see. Natalie, you did a little dance there over, I think, Kids Street Theater. Or was it my imagination?
Oh, yeah. I've done the Kids Street Theater for 2 years now, maybe three.
Yeah. So what's up with that? What happens in Kids Street Theater?
Oh, well, the first 2 years our friend, she did the play, and then she, you know, cast it, and we had a bunch of adults in it. And then this year and the year before, my friend Phoebe, she wrote the play, and so it's a lot of fun.
So it's a kids' takeover is what it is. We've had a puppet show every year at the show, at the festival, but the last 2 years the kids have taken it over. They've written the play, they've cast it, they've done the costumes, and they've put it on, and it's a really fun and it's a fun time. We all gather around, and yeah, and they do a great job.
So. Okay. Well, that sounds pretty cool. I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
Let's see. So, what else do you, as a lifelong veteran of the Heartwood Music Festival, what are some other things that you look forward to?
The youth music competition, the street theater, and then, there's sports competition, and then, my favorite thing, my favorite food there is root beer floats, so.
Is there any food? There's food on a stick? There should be food on a stick, I think, at festivals and carnivals. That's supposed to be, you know. You all better have your food on a stick. I'm going to send an inspector in, a stick food inspector. They have that job. Who knew? I'm applying right now. Again, Bevan's going to cut
You're
my
just,
job, so I
right.
got to find something to do.
I keep thinking you've just now applied for that.
I'm not good at anything but teaching. I'm not saying I'm good at that, but that's the closest I can come. So come on, Bevan, cut me some slack.
We've got a nice variety of local food. So.
All right, good. On a stick?
I don't think there's anything on a stick, but we can put one on a stick for you when you
Thank
come.
Thank you. The Honorable Leif Erickson stick food. I like it.
Let's see. So the Heartwood Music Festival, number 11. Yeah. And that's this weekend, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Saturday. This Saturday. It's afternoon. Starts at 3.
Just a little drive from Lexington, not too far.
Yeah, if you've never been, it's a beautiful place, and it gets you out of your normal routines, circles.
What is it like there? I mean, what are the environs like of?
Well, the Millville Community Center was the old Millville School, and so they renovated. A lot of it got torn down, but they fixed up the gym and renovated parts of it. So it's this nice historic feel to it. It's got a creek nearby, so we take advantage of that and get biologists out in the creek with kids for some stream ecology workshops, and they get to learn about what critters they find under rocks and everything, what that shows about the health of the stream, and have a lot of fun and get cool. So we take advantage of the rural setting. I have parents often tell me how much they like the festival because it's small and they don't have to worry about losing their kids. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
And playing in the creek is fun. I mean, we were poor when I was a kid, so that's all we could do. But I learned a lot by turning over rocks in that creek.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally something would grab your toe or your finger, you know, a crawdad or whatever. But who gets hurt? No big deal.
My daughter calls them lobsters. I always love that. I mean, why not? They look just like lobsters.
That's right.
Let's catch some more lobsters. Or avoid them catching us. Let's see, Natalie, you probably grew up playing in that creek kind of around this festival time.
Yeah, kind of. I still do.
Still do, yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see, you guys. So, what time do things get underway?
Start at 3:00. The festival starts with the square dance at 3:00.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. The first competition is at 4:00, and there's lots of stuff to do. We have a lot of different environmental organizations there tabling. The Green Party is going to be there.
Okay.
And a lot of other good organizations. Dave Cooper from Lexington is going to be there showing people how to make park benches out of pallets. Some other fun.
That's cool. That's a big deal. That guy's been.
Yeah, putting stealth deployments of. Park benches at bus stops.
I love that. Yeah, in Lexington, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, so anyway, he'll be out there showing you how to do it if you want to learn how to do that.
That's a big selling point. I mean, I think that is. Yeah. I mean, that guy is like kind of like a bizarre underground celebrity, kind of.
We always has fun stuff going on. So
uh-huh.
Yeah.
So our let's see. So there's food. There's music. The bands are like kind of from around the area, or what's the?
We typically do. This year we have some music out of Louisville. John Gage, I don't know if you're familiar with him, and the Bibblehauser Brothers. They're award-winning duo out of Louisville, and they're teaming up with John Gage to play for us at 5:00. And then we have Fatty in the Pocket, a new band out of Frankfurt playing. So.
Fatty in the Pocket.
Fatty in the Pocket, a spinoff of Triceratops Jackson that was out of Frankfurt. So, yeah, wow. It'll be fun to hear them. You can always hear something new at our festival.
Yeah. Fantastic.
You know how you can really make this thing take off is use the Bugs Bunny clip, you know, where the guys with the long beards are doing the square dance. When you open your square dancing, have them do the grab your partner by the beard. You remember that? That's funny stuff right there. You can have it on a big screen. I'm going to revolutionize your entire festival. Right
there
here.
You go.
Bugs Bunny and those... stereotypical hillbillies on that cartoon are going to change everything. Do-si-do.
So this is, by the way, for the few people in here that have Facebook. just kidding.
Drink the Kool-Aid.
It's on Facebook. You all may not know it, but it is. And it's the 11th annual Heartwood Music Festival. Not to be confused. The 11th annual Kentucky Heartwood Music Festival, not to be confused with the Heartwood Music Festival, which I'm not sure that you're aware of, that is in Tennessee.
Oh, really?
Anyway, we'll look into that. So I noticed this a little bit. And so anyway.
You could give somebody an interesting story if they show up in Tennessee for your festival, or vice versa.
Exactly.
Somebody's going to have a good story.
So, and then people can, I noticed that... let's see. Oh, I know. So your all's website has lots of great information about the festival, and just as importantly, Kentucky Heartwood in general. So that's
kyheartwood.org.
Yeah. So details for Saturday and so forth and so on, as well, I see, as a list of the previous winners.
It's fun. It's fun to see that list. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, they get $100 each and a beautiful trophy that a local artist, a retired K-State professor, makes. So Yeah, it's really special. It's fun to recently I've been in a couple friends' homes and seen the trophy on their, you know, in a prime spot on a windowsill, or it's been fun to see that.
Yeah, on a shining pedestal. Yeah. I know, like, so somebody that I don't know personally, but I've talked to a few times, is I think the guy who does Folk Bike in Frankfurt. Is he going to be there? It looks
Stuart
like?
Harrod. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Stuart, he's always there, and he has a bubble bike. You can ride a bike and make bubbles, and it has a little meter to show you how much energy you're saving, and what you could power with what you've energy you've generated. Right. Riding your bike.
We've tragically missed the opportunity to meet in person a few times, but he seems like a genuine character.
Oh, he's a great asset to the Frankfurt community. He really is. There's lots of fun, progressive stuff going on in Frankfurt. Just when you hear people talk just about the legislature and, pigeonhole Frankfurt as being what happens in the Capitol building, think again, because there's a great progressive community in Frankfurt.
Okay. Yeah. Well... And then I see, let's see, I'm just kind of just glancing over your all's website. But the workshops, is there any other kind of workshop that you want to mention that you're excited about that's going on?
Oh, we have a great natural healing workshop. Andy McDonald's doing a fun introduction to solar energy. Andy just got back from an international sustainability solar conference in California, and is going to Germany in November to learn about what the Germans are doing in their amazing pursuit of transitioning away from fossil fuels to renewables. And he's given a workshop on introduction to solar energy and how you can apply that in your own home. So
yeah, I keep hearing about this new thing called solar. You get power from the sun? Is that the idea?
Man, I think we've evolved with that.
You mean the sun actually puts out power we could use? Who knew? We don't have to manufacture things and create and dig up nuclear waste and things.
Yeah, evolution. Yeah, it's awesome.
I want to hear some more power of the fiddle. Natalie Dufour, perhaps. Is there any chance that you've got another fiddle tune for us?
How about Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel? Because it came out today.
Maybe not.
I mean, it didn't come out today. It was the number one song in 1986, actually. Hmm. So, Sledgehammer, 5, 6, 7, 8.
How about Step Town?
That's even better.
Yeah.
This is Natalie Dufour playing another fiddle tune.
Yeah.
Natalie, who's 12, and Chris's daughter, yes?
Yes.
Correct. So, and playing at the Heartwood Music Festival. So, take it away, Natalie. Natalie Dufour there.
Yay.
Natalie Dufour on fiddle. Natalie is 12. You'll be 13 very soon, though, right?
Yes.
Early happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Where do you start when it comes to learning something like that? Just like at the beginning? Or?
Oh, well, my teacher, he just plays like a verse and I repeat it back to him.
Oh, cool. Okay. And then it sort of adds up over time. And,
yeah, and then but like, you have to go over it. Otherwise, you forget the first verse when you're on the last verse.
Right. So then like, and then it's committed. You become part of the oral tradition then, and it becomes part of, then you know.
Yeah, I don't use music. I just do everything orally and with a recorder.
So. And then so that's a lot of pressure maybe to hold on to all those songs, or are you just like, no, I know them?
Oh, well, I don't know all of them. If you just said, play this tune, I would have to.
Like,
you know,
Sledgehammer? Can you play that?
Sorry. 5, 6, 7, 8
How about no?
I like
I don't
you.
Think Peter
I like
Gabriel
the kid.
Can play what you just played.
I think she's going to go far. I like the kid. Okay, well, so thanks to you guys for coming by. Have a wonderful time at the 11th annual Kentucky Heartwood Music Festival on Saturday.
Yeah.
And so just one last chance for Heartwood. Are there – I always kind of hate to say, so what do you got going on beyond that for the big thing that you've been planning? But is there any big thing about Heartwood that you want people to know about, or any kind of workshops or anything like that beyond
the music
festival?
We're constantly struggling to defend the forest. I mean, they just came out with a new logging project around around Beaver Creek Wilderness.
Project sounds so innocent.
Yeah. So there are a couple in the Greenwood logging proposal is also involves several thousand acres, and we're out in the field. If you ever want to come out in the woods with us and help do field work, we are get our work done. From volunteer help and the passion of people who love the woods and love our public land. So how
can if people are interested in helping or participating with Kentucky Heartwood, what's the best way for them to be in touch with you all?
Yeah, you can either Facebook or through kyheartwood.org. You can get in touch with us.
Okay. Okay. Well, Natalie, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, it was fun.
And playing on the show. Come back anytime, if you would, please. Anytime at all.
Thanks for having us, Mitch.
I look forward to visiting with you all next time we visit. Okay.
And thank you for what you're all doing. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. This is Trivial Thursdays on WRFL, and I'm your host, Mick. Happy to be here. It's just a little bit after 8, 7. It's 7 minutes after 8. If you're supposed to be somewhere at 8, you might be late.
Whoops.
I'm happy to be here with my man, Leif Erickson.
I want to be your sledgehammer.
That's we'll talk about that later. There's counseling for that. Leif, you just came back from Detroit, right?
Yes. One of the bands I'm in, March Madness Marching Band, we went to Detroit for a festival of weirdos like us called the Crash Street Band Festival there in Detroit. I had never been there, and it was amazing. Everybody was telling me to be scared, but no, I was just sad at the state of affairs, you know?
I heard a lot of tales of Detroit last night. I was fascinated. I thought it was just my imagination that Detroit maybe in some ways was sort of like Fort Apache, the Bronx.
I didn't feel unsafe. We were told by the festival organizers, if you use your head and stay in the festival areas and stay together, you'd be fine. But when I say sad, I mean, like, it was just like there was this huge, like, 6-lane road that goes down the middle of Detroit. You could tell was built for lots of traffic. And there were people sort of riding bikes and a few cars, and which is great on one hand, but then you see all these burnout buildings and vacant lots. But the artistic community there in Detroit is really trying their best to revitalize the downtown area and the places that have sort of been abandoned and forgotten by much of America. There's a lot of really incredible architecture there. We had the festival right next to their Grand Central there, which is an amazing building. You should look it up online. I don't know what the actual name of it is, but if you put train station in Detroit, you will find it. It's kind of scary in a fun way looking building, haunted.
I saw photos,
looking.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's amazing. And they were going to tear it down recently, apparently. I guess probably put a huge pit there if they're going to take after Lexington. But instead, they saved it. So I'm glad to know that, because they need to use it for something. It's been in like 10 movies or something.
So this was, it's called Crash Detroit.
Yes.
And the March Madness Marching Band went. This was March Madness Marching Band who went to the Austin festival called Honk Texas.
5 times, yeah.
It's kind of famous there.
Right.
And so this was the band's first foray to another festival.
It's a much smaller festival. And it was not just brass bands, but yeah, a lot of brass bands. But it's a much smaller festival. We knew a couple of bands there, but then we got to meet a lot of new bands. And I think we probably are going to go back to Austin. But Crash really inspired us in a lot of ways, and it was small enough to be a more cozy kind of situation. But all the bands were in the same park, just under different tents. And I guess those tents absorb some of the noise, because surprisingly, it wasn't disruptive to have both bands in the same park playing at the same time. But it's the thing I love about those festivals. Do you remember Band Geeks from high school? I was one of those. Sarah,
I was too. That's why I quit. I quit band over that.
Did you? But there was a subset of Band Geeks. These were the Band Geeks. The other Band Geeks looked at like, what's with those guys? And that's what March Madness and all these festivals are made up of, is the weird Band Geeks, the subset of weird Band Geeks, who, and this is what we wish high school band had been like. So it's a lot of fun. There's everybody's happy, and it's not a competition. You know, it's kind of an informal competition because everybody wants to bring their best stuff, but there's no awards. There's no contest. It's just people enjoying bands enjoying each other's music, getting to know right. each other. It's quite an experience. It's exhausting for an old man, but.
Well, I'm glad for March Madness, Marching Man, to be spreading their gospel, or whatever you call that stuff that they spread around.
I'm more evangelical about March Madness than I ever was about church stuff.
I've actually got, I'm one of the few people in the world that has some March Madness on, like as a music file.
Oh, nice.
So let's see if this works. I'll play this. Then we're going to come back with Sarah Wiley Van Meter, and we're going to talk about the Seer, which is the Henry County Wendell Berry documentary that's screening at the Kentucky tonight. So everybody stick around. This is Trivial Thursdays on WRFL, and let's see if this works. He said, with it not working. Oh, it did. Oh, great. Okay.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.FM. And, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to wrfl.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
Trivial Thursdays here on WRFL.
Greetings.
This is
Hello.
Your host, Mick. I'm here with Leif Erickson.
Hi.
And also Sarah Wiley Van Meter. I'm delighted to see, as always. Good morning to
Likewise.
You.
Likewise. Good morning. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Welcome to the sixth best run city in the United States.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Something like that. What was that study that came out? It just got cracked yesterday. Or a couple days ago, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, it showed up on Facebook. I mean, did you all read more than the
I did. I skimmed it.
I've been dodging Facebook a little bit because of the political stuff. So I'm missing some things on Facebook. It's
just come
depressing.
On my show and talk about politics. Then you don't have to worry about trolls responding.
Right.
Well, at least not directly.
just turning off the radio, which is kind of not the point.
So, no, I'm going to try to find it real quick because it was pretty cool. And
yeah, really, a few really major headlines for Lexington popped up in my news feed.
Right. And then there's Lori Houlihan's feed. If you ever want to know what's going on, you just go to Lori's page. Let's see. So the thing that we're talking about, though, is the it's like this. Where did it go? Oh, come on now. Does anyone know the now I can't find it, but here it is. Best run cities in America.
Yeah.
Whew, just in time.
Yeah.
And this was in something called Wallet Hub, which sounds really reputable to me.
I would let my students use that as a source, actually. That's perfect.
2016's best run cities in America. Running a city is a tall order. Not only must government officials navigate local politics, but they also must strive to balance the public's interests with the city's responsibilities and resources, so forth and so on. And number six, Lexington, Kentucky. Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
We're no Boise, Idaho, you know. They're number one.
Wow.
But
hey, we don't have a bunch of potatoes going out to the world. That's probably what it is. You got to have a well-run city to supply the world with potatoes.
Right. Yeah.
That's in the Bible.
And I think it has everything to do with Lori Houlihan.
Yeah.
Lori.
It's always possible. Yeah. Let's see. So that's great. That's not the only kind of cool piece of Lexington news we've seen lately.
Yeah, the money for the town branch.
Right.
Yeah. Was it $14 million.
$14 million.
So exciting.
Yeah.
I said to my son Otis, who's four, I said, hey, we're gonna have a river.
That's a good way of putting
it. He's like, great.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid and my dad told me there was water under the street. Mm-hmm. I pondered on that for a long time. It still kind of blows my mind to think of water flowing under some of the streets in our city. It's pretty awesome stuff.
I really love that. I'm going to use that simplification, Sarah Wilder.
Right. For, well, I know.
I can have a river. No, it's sometimes you just got to do it this way. It's just the easiest way.
Well, to a four-year-old. But yeah, I mean, he's McConnell Springs is such a, part of our adventures in Lexington. To explain that spring runs forth and is right under our feet.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, and just to be clear for those who might not know, I mean, so this $14 million is to kind of, I don't know, on a certain level, reinvent aspects of downtown Lexington in a way that will be an absolute kind of, for lack of a better word, reinvention.
I haven't seen a lot of cities do anything like what I've seen in the plans. I mean, I've been to a lot of places. It's going to be incredible, I think.
Isn't it a little bit like, what's the Texas town? Not El Paso, but somewhere that a lot of Lexington City leaders went about 6 years ago. I thought maybe Griff went too. And it was, and they had, Lori's going to text me in a minute and tell me. And they did this thing where the river walk is what it's called, where they cut through the middle of their downtown and the Lexington city leaders, hasn't Griff gone before on one of these trips where they go somewhere and point and talk.
Austin,
So one of these trips that Lexington city leaders went on, they went to a Texas town, not Austin. And, that kind of had been revitalized. It was a similar size to Lexington, and
gosh, wouldn't it be great if he was here? It's a question that we have for.
Right.
You should call in.
Someone's going to tell me in a second. I just have every faith in these modern communications devices. But anyway, so this is great news too. I mean, we're talking about this sort of affects maybe the Vine Street area in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah, and McConnell Springs, probably everybody listening knows this, but was named after two of the founders of Lexington, McConnell's. And that house that survived the fire at the stockyards was one of those brothers' houses. Yeah, and it's amazingly survived the fire. I was talking to Robert King of the fire department. He said that it was a close call. And some of those cars that burned over there, they actually, the metal and everything ran to the ground, just rainbow colored. That's how hot that fire was. Yeah. But that old house from the 1700s survived all of that tragedy over there. And that was one of the McConnell's houses. And there's another one on the corner of Manchester and Forbes Road there, which, Manchester turns into Old Frankfort or something like that. But anyway, there's a little house there that's not being used, a little dusty looking house. It says, do not enter, do not trespass. That house is actually a little older than the one that survived the stockyard. So those are like the two oldest houses in Lexington. Wow. Trivia for you there.
Yeah.
Let's see. So, and along those lines, I'm going to jump. I'm going to make two little frog jumps. One of them, San Antonio. Okay. Done.
Oh, there you go.
That's the Texas town with the river walk thing.
Ah.
It's not like what I don't think what they're going to build, but San Antonio was revitalized by this river walk thing that they did.
Well, and Louisville has a really cool river walk for miles and miles of the river.
Right, and they've done enormous things to sort of help things there, too. So this could be great. A water feature in Lexington, imagine that. And then completely just sort of derail this and go in a different direction. Speaking of saving old houses, Sarah Wiley, what's your husband Griffin Van Meter he's all up in Cynthiana.
That's your
stomping ground,
it
right?
It is my stomping ground, and I just want to say I am not behind. I am not the puppet master. I am. Griffin is his own puppet. He is Chucky.
Write that down.
Okay?
That should be his shirt. I am my own puppet.
I know.
I
don't put your hand
in. I know. I'm worried that it
has looked like me being like, hey, honey, like, hey, there's this big house in Cynthiana. You need to go in there and save that thing. No.
Griffin has
his own heart for these projects, and he just feels like there's no reason for that house to be torn down, and
unlike most other people, he's not willing to leave it at that.
Right? Yeah.
Which is amazing.
It is amazing.
And I wish I could have been around for that. Like, I'd like to see switches. You must surely have seen Do you know the look with Griffin where a switch flips in his head and he's like, suddenly something
gone.
Becomes a thing?
It's gone.
Like, when did that become a thing, I wonder? The Cynthiana House, by the way, a historic house, what's it called?
The Handy House.
The Handy House, right. And so did you see the switch flip in Griff's head when he decided that the Handy House must not be torn down?
You know, my brother's wife, Emily, my sister-in-law, was in charge of kind of Main Street things, revitalization mm-hmm. in Cynthiana, and they were having a conversation, and she really felt like it needed to be saved.
Yeah.
And it was somewhere in that conversation between the two of them, and I've thought, well, the common denominator here are the Ammermans. That's my family.
Yes.
So somehow we get together and empower people to dream. And yeah, I think that they, it's taken me a while, and also even just talking to other people, like hearing you say that, Mick, for me to really realize that, that Griffin doesn't let things go. And even when I think that, oh, I'm not going to hear about that again, or that's not going to come up again, then all of a sudden there are 8 articles about it.
Here's my impersonation. Let's do it. Who wants pancakes?
Let's go tubing. By the way.
Let's go tubing after that. What the heck is this tubing? How are there going to be 400 people on that?
Oh, I actually, currently there are 457 tickets sold.
We're changing the subject again.
Tubeathon.
Yeah.
What you need to be different and do it with an outer tube instead of an inner tube. I've always wondered why nobody tubes with an outer tube.
Would that be like a donut hole?
I'm going to corner the market on it. Whatever it is, I'm going to be rich. Leif Erickson's Outer Tube Adventures. Only $200.
I'm making a shirt that says I was there in the early days, and it's going to be like, you know, an etching by Cricket Press of me with a real tube, with like an actual, because that's how we did it back in the day, in the early days of Griff and the and like a
like
real
tire?
Yes. I've seen these fancy tubes that you guys have now with the little ropes on the sides and
the
stuff.
The YouTubes.
I've seen the pictures.
That are neon.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, again, here. So, Kentucky for Kentucky.
Saturday, noon to 10.
Yeah.
A tubing.
And that you can find that anywhere on the internet. Just type like T-O and and it'll show up. No,
wait
T-U, sorry.
T-O? Yeah, T-O-O-B, is that how you're spelling
too? I appreciate that you were going to go with that.
But you can misspell things, so I thought that's where you were going.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's
that
right.
About
yeah,
Google.
And you get it anyway.
I think you get it really
wrong. Oh, yeah,
wrong.
It corrects your spelling. Yeah.
The sight of that, I can barely.
So, yeah, you know. It starts at noon. Or, I'm sorry, it starts at 1, and then at 3, they're going to bring in food trucks. They're going to have a DJ.
They're going to be camping
Saturday night.
They solve this problem with it. It's like at this bend. It's at a bend in the river,
mm-hmm.
which solves this basic problem of tubing and canoeing and stuff, where basically it sounds like you can do this route in an inner tube and then get out and walk across a small parcel of land and be back at the beginning.
Right, yes. And also, I mean, we don't have kids who will sit still for something like that, but a lot of people are bringing their kids.
Yeah.
Because it's on, yeah, there's this grounds that you can kind of romp on.
So this is the Kentucky for Kentucky first annual tubeathon or something like that.
Yeah. 500 tubers.
It's crazy.
On year one.
The potatoes again. How did potatoes come back in?
Yeah.
Nothing. Crickets, tubers, never. Okay. I don't know.
No, I got it.
Too many crossword puzzles.
I missed it. I confess. Let's see. So all of these things are happening after.
Right. Yes. After tonight.
And tonight is something very close to your heart, Sarah Wiley Ammerman Van Meter. You have a enduring connection with Wendell, with Wendell Berry and. I was going to say with
James Baker Hall.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And
yeah. So we'll just say this a few times. Tonight at 7:30 at the Kentucky Theater is Laura Dunn's film The Seer, a portrait mm-hmm. of Wendell Berry. A documentary like this has never been done on Wendell Berry. One of the reasons is because he wouldn't be imaged by a moving camera.
Oh, fascinating. Okay, you mean that was his choice?
Yes.
He chose. Okay.
Yes. So, I mean,
do you know why? I'm just curious. Like,
Laura can say it so much better than I can, but I mean, he just feels that that moving images confined by a frame don't allow for people to choose what they see, to sit with what they want to see for long enough, that it's too fleeting.
Well, I mean, in part, I can't speak for him, obviously, but, you know, I teach documentary film sometimes, an intro to film, and there's always a choice. There's always an editing choice. There's always somebody behind the camera deciding what you get to see right. and how you see it. Maybe right. maybe that's part of it, too, is right. like it's kind of built on a falsehood. Even the best documentary, somebody had to decide when to turn the camera on and when to turn it off. That's right. You begin with choices right there. So right. it's somebody else's hands at that point.
Right. And so that's how I met Laura, was because met with that challenge. She just said, okay, well, I mean, we're going to keep on doing this. And she knew of James Baker Hall's photographs of Wendell,
mm-hmm.
Mostly through a book called Tobacco Harvest and Elegy, about tobacco farming. And she contacted Marianne contacted me, and we met, and I was able to show her that it's not just these photos of this one moment of tobacco farming. It's
an incredible
40
wealth.
Years of photography, just starting in the late 50s kids.
A treasure, really. I mean, yeah. Just a treasure.
And here's Laura. I'm so excited.
Yeah, let's see if we've got... Laura, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, good morning to you.
Morning to you, too.
We were just talking about you. How's that feel?
I think I've got Jeff on, too. Hang on a second.
Oh, good.
Jeff, are you there?
This is
I'm here.
A complicated telephonic house of cards we're building here. yes. So,
can you hear Jeff?
Yeah,
I'm here.
Yes, Jeff, we can hear you.
Okay, great.
Well, so welcome to Trivial Thursdays. You guys, will you just introduce yourselves for a second for people?
Sure. I'm Laura Dunn, and from Austin, Texas, but so happy to be in Kentucky showing our film about Kentucky.
Okay.
This year, A Portrait of Wendell Berry. And then Jeff, my husband and co-conspirator at Every Way.
And we've got Jeff and Laura, like I said, happy to have you on the airwaves here. Welcome to Kentucky. Are you in Louisville? Is that right?
Yes. Okay. We're here this morning. Yeah, we're coming into Lexington soon.
Say it with me, Louisville. Can you say that?
Oh, it's so hard. Louisville. Jeff does it a lot better than I do it.
Well done.
All right.
So we've got your. We're here with my cohort. Leif Erickson
Hello.
Is on the mic, and then your buddy Sarah Wiley Van Meter is here on the mic too.
Hi.
So here we all are, and you guys are going to premiere this film. Is it in Lexington premiering
it's
tonight?
The Lexington premiere.
The Lexington premiere. Okay. Choose those words carefully.
Right.
The Kentucky Theater, by the way, a spectacular place.
Yeah.
Honored. Isabel Yates just honored the other day for helping to restore that.
Right. And I think it's going to be very festive this evening. I think there will be a lot of people, a lot of tables out front, So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and if I understand it correctly, Kentucky for Kentucky will be debuting their new Wendell Berry coffee mugs at the training.
Yeah, that's right.
Was that a surprise? No, I'm just kidding. All kinds of things. Now the movie. This film about Wendell Berry. You guys probably didn't hear, but we were just talking about Wendell's his preference to not be recorded in moving pictures. Is it? Can you say
yes.
that?
Yes, yes.
A little tricky for filmmakers, right?
Oh yeah, truly. I mean, I kind of quip to folks that Wendell has a very low regard for our medium. He thinks that screens of all kinds deaden the imagination, So that does.
I think he's pretty famous for
challenge.
That. Yeah.
And of course, I in some ways agree with him. Like I've said, but I think it's just the medium that a lot of people look to. And so the question to me is always how to imbue it with something artful and a signal that will inspire people. And so that became the challenge. But it really was working with Sarah that made the concept of a portrait possible, because though we didn't subject him to filming him directly, we did a lot of audio interviews with him, and we documented his place and the people with whom he resides in Henry County, a lot of farmers, a lot of his neighbors and friends and family who are all so lovely and inspiring. But then Sarah empowered us with this incredible treasure trove of James Baker Hall archival photos, where he had taken pictures of Wendell and his family and his world since they were in college together at UK. So they're just extraordinary. Many of them have never been seen before mm-hmm. because Sarah entrusted us with the slide negatives and all of that. And Jeff did all the hard work of mm-hmm. scanning them and preparing them. But we sort of composed a portrait with all this mm-hmm. archival material, mm-hmm. as well as verite footage of folks in Henry County.
Well, it sounds brilliant to me. I mean, the photos, I would just like to say, are an incalculable treasure. James Baker Hall's photos, one, just towering Kentuckians' photos of another towering Kentuckian. Especially, I mean, the poetry of those being of a Kentuckian who prefers to not be represented in moving pictures. Mm-hmm. It's just, I mean, it's I'm almost speechless over it on a certain level. I can't wait to see it.
Well, I always think about, you know, like a portrait is really, doesn't have to be the likeness of one's face. It's, you know, you want to try to capture the essence or at least a piece of the essence of someone. And someone is grand and heroic as Wendell Berry. You know, our objective was simply to try to render something that's true to the spirit of his work. And so, yeah, I think in some ways looking at the way he sees the world rather than the way the world sees him mm-hmm. is appropriate to, you know, to the likeness of him rather than a kind of, you know, traditional, conventional mm-hmm. biopic. Kind of, you need to go against the grain when you're talking about Wendell Berry, I think.
And I'm sitting here trying to count the number of people who even talk about him in the film, and I'm counting three. I'm counting Tanya and Mary and Arwen. And then everybody else, we're just seeing the influence of Wendell. Right? Is that right?
I think you're right. Do you suggest, you know?
Well, I think Steve mentions Unsettling.
Oh,
right?
That's right.
Briefly.
So, well then, what's happening? Now, let me say this. It sort of reminds me of the Errol Morris's The Gates of Heaven, where I think one of the taglines for the movie was, "This is not a documentary about pet cemeteries." And so I saw something, I felt like this similar kind of a contrary sentiment that claimed that this was not a documentary about Wendell Berry. Would you care to sort of grapple with that?
This is not a pipe.
Jeff, jump in, please.
Sure. Well, I think that I think one thing that I've heard Laura point out that I think is really true is when you're talking about a body of work that's as extensive as Wendell Berry's, all the fiction, the essays, the poetry, and the density of his writing on top of that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just that it's that kind of body of work. You're talking about very dense work. It's not, you know, many books you can read, a lot of nonfiction you can read, and you can pretty much get the entire book by reading the chapter titles. He's not like that. His writing is very, very dense. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about a medium like film, which is high resolution in terms of stimulus and kind of visual information, but it's very low resolution in terms of text, you really can't do anything remotely close to comprehensive. So you have to do something that's more suggestive and that hopefully just, I think, directs people to his work. I mean, the mission is accomplished if people leave the film saying, I think I need to go pick up a Wendell Berry book, or I haven't read any of his poetry and I want to read some of that. So that's kind of how we look at it. I don't think we would, by any stretch of the imagination, claim that the film is a you know, as a biopic or anything like it, it's sort of an arrow mm-hmm. pointing you back to him and his work.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, I feel like I've read it, it described by maybe by one of you all as also kind of a celebration of Henry County.
Yes, indeed. I think to me it was like, if what did Wendell care about? What did he write about most? What are the themes that seem to really be central? And of course, farming and generational family farmers on the land, the stewardship of the land they're in. And if you try to do something sort of an ethnographic portrait of Wendell's place, what you're going to find is a lot of farmers. So we spent a lot of time getting to know different kinds of farmers in Henry County, some big, some small, CSA, young farmers who are generational farmers but are coming up and trying to reimagine how to sustain farm life. So there are a lot of farmers in the film, and what we have said is that I think in the end we really fell in love with Henry County and the people there and the place. And so it's not a critique of any particular farm or farmer. It really is a celebration, like a love letter to these folks saying what you're doing is important, it's beautiful, it's vital. It's all too often left out of the conversation around food. And so we want to celebrate you and show that there's this dignity and this beauty in this place. Don't disregard the rural America. There's a lot of value there.
Yeah, I have a question for you all, because you do bring in the agribusiness farmers, this wonderful father-son duo, the Roberts,
yes.
Is that right?
Yes, yes.
And in a film about doing away with agribusiness, really, you are able to bring out their dignity. And it almost brings me to tears that you're able to do that. And I think if I ask, oh, how did you do that? That's not quite the right question. But if you can talk at all about them or how you viewed them or how you got to know them, I'd be interested to hear.
I'd also, if I can interject here real quick, I'd also, you know, you say it almost brings you to tears, and I'm the same way. And I think part of it is because of this, this fleeting quality that we as Kentuckians treasure, sort of, that it is so hard to kind of grasp onto and grapple with. So I also would love to hear how you did it.
I'm going to take a stab at that, Jeff, and then I'll let you make the answer better. But I think Mark Roberts and Dale Roberts were among the kindest and greatest folks we met while working on this film. They could not have been more welcoming to us and our boys. And so it's real easy to, you know, render folks that are truly lovely, wonderful people in a positive light. I think that, how it started out was I really want to just document what's going on here. I don't want to be sort of projecting my own views onto a place. I want the place itself to teach me. And I think what I learned from reaching out to Mark, because I knew that he was a larger scale farmer, he's still a generational family farmer. I mean, his dad bought that land, and then Mark is grappling with, how do I sustain this? And for him, the only way he knows how to try to sustain that farm is to scale up and to lease more land. And as you scale up, then you, by necessity, have to have more labor and more equipment. And so he is grappling with that, and he's grappling that in such an honest way. Mm-hmm. When you talk with him, he says, you know, like, Wendell Berry is a wonderful writer, and I respect him. But if you were to start out now on a farm today, I don't think you can make it economically if you farm the way he's talking about. You know, because for him, he's not a professor at UK who's subsidizing his home economy with farming. That is his profession, his career, and his whole income. And I think if you talk to some of the younger farmers also in the film, some of them might say the same thing. Others might say, look, it's not about the money for me. I'm going to, you know, build fences on the side. My wife's going to work at the bank, and I'm going to farm the way I want to farm, and it's simply going to be just there to subsidize my income.
Because farming's so easy.
Right,
he said
so
sarcastically,
easy.
Sorry.
Right. And so I think that it's a labor of love for all of these folks. And they're all grappling with the questions of how do you make it work economically. And so, again, I would just say that to me, it's never about good people versus bad people, at least in the films that I make. It's really about good people grappling with difficult, if not bad, systems and asking those questions to themselves and to each other and to us. It's like, how do you make this work? Is this valuable? Is farming valuable? And how do we sustain it? And that's a question for all of us, not just for Mark and Dale.
I'm like, oh, gosh, that's me. I'm a good person grappling.
Well, you know, farming isn't easy, and also trying to get farming to be seen as the valuable thing it is not easy. Like, nothing worthwhile is easy, really, right? So,
well said, well said.
But farming is important, and for people to understand how important farming is also important. There's like two levels of importance there when it comes to farming, and I think, you know, one of the things that Wendell has, you know, written about is this, what we're losing by getting away from that farming that you can do to actually be economically viable without having to put all these other things, layer all these other things on top of farming. So it's really not a conflict in the sense of people disagreeing, but more like his point entirely, which is that farming should be something that we do because it connects us with the earth and with each other. And we should make a living doing that, but, you know, things have changed so much.
I think that's something that comes through in Mark's comments really strongly, and that's that, you know, as he's talking about it, one of the sacrifices that he personally has made is that, as he puts it in the film, you know, for me, the joy of this is getting down in the dirt, and watching the crop, watching it grow, and by virtue of scaling via all technology, it's forced him into a role that's more of a manager's position. And that's a personal sacrifice that he had to bear that also comes through. And I think that you can't help but feel for him. You know, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. I have to interject momentarily. I was, when you were talking a minute ago about how this is kind of all of our plights to bear, whether or not we're farmers or not, the Nancy Griffith song, Trouble in the Fields. Do you guys know it? She's from Austin.
Yes. I love that song.
I say that sarcastically. Sorry. So, you know, the line in that song, now our children live in the city and they rest upon our shoulders and they never want the rain to fall or the weather to get colder.
Yes.
Which are important things for farmers to have happen. So, you know, a lot of times we live in a fairly decent sized city here too. And, you know, you can spend a lot of time grousing about the weather with people, like, it's raining again today, you know, but some of these things are pretty important for us to eat.
I think in the urban world, we are so detached from the natural cycle.
Yeah.
And I think there's spiritual consequences therein, you know, because you start to really convince yourself that you're in control of your own destiny. Mm-hmm. And if you talk to farmers, they're very eloquent about the fact that, you know, it's really, you're not in control, and you're subject to the weather. And a lot of them would say that it's, you know, in our other film, we talk about God. Like, you're subject to powers greater than yourself, and there's something humbling about that. And I think it resituates you in your own life in the way we really are, you know.
And it has
to. Because of the urban world, you kind of really can kid yourself quite a bit.
Yeah.
You can create your own destiny.
It has to teach a lot of patience too, which is an important thing when you're dealing with powers greater than yourself. You have to have a lot of perspective and a lot of patience. And, you know, getting away from farming, you know, is because of a lot of things that have made lives better in a lot of ways. But it's kind of like once you awaken that genie, you know, the Fantasia sort of thing, you can use the magic, but it often gets out of your control and then it becomes something else. So by getting away from that way of life, it's like we have lost a lot of our perspective and patience, where you have to wait on the weather. You have to have a perspective about the long view of your farming, because over time, you know, you can be a successful farmer, even though with this season the rain might not be cooperating. Farming gives you a long view and teaches you a lot of patience. I think that's important.
Yeah, there's that segment in the film that where Wendell is talking about that.
Oh, cool. I haven't seen it.
Yes. Right. By the way, we're talking about The Seer, just to sort of throw this in, the documentary about Henry County and Wendell Berry that is screening tonight at the Kentucky Theater. It's at 7:30, I believe, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Downtown. And we're on the phone with the creators, the directors, the filmmakers, and Sarah Wiley. Can you? It's Laura and
Laura and Jeff.
Yeah, Laura and Jeff. And it's great to have you guys on the line from Louisville, by way of Austin, or the other way around. I'm not sure. I'm curious if again the project seems as a documentary filmmaker. Like, how did you see the? At what point, or how did you see the kernel in this of what you wanted to of what you wanted to try to convey? How do you find the kernel? How do you find the kernel in something like this?
I think in this case, it's really fortunate. We have six little boys, just so everyone understands that we're. If you hear little children's voices, it's the interruptions, right, Sarah, that feed the creative process.
Yeah.
I thought that was your producers. I don't know.
they are.
Yeah, exactly. So I think in this case we're very fortunate because we have all the text. You know, we have Wendell Berry books to read. And I think for me, that really is where the kernel is. You know, that's where the standard is. And so I just spent the first 6 months just reading and reading and reading. Mm-hmm. And I think whenever I felt a little bit lost and confused, you know, just return to the books. I mean, there's more than 50 of them, and fiction, poetry, nonfiction. I probably don't have to tell Kentuckians about how significant all of that work is. But
you might be surprised. I think that Wendell Berry is coming into just an incredible renaissance, you know, everywhere in some ways. I know I haven't read as much as I would like to, but it's staggering. It's mind blowing, and it's some of what he wrote is so ahead of its time that to watch it come around now is it just melts your mind almost to look at the copyrights on those books. And watch them as they come around over the horizon.
It's that long view that farming brings you.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, it is staggering, absolutely. And I think also, you know, I really knew his nonfiction. I didn't know much of his fiction. I'm reading The Unsettling of America when I first started this project, and it was Robert Redford that said, you know, what are you going to do next? I want to help you with something, because he had worked on a film with us about Austin and Barton Springs in Austin. And I was telling people the other night, like, I really didn't want to do another film. I just had a child and I was tired. And I said, you know, well, I mean, I'm rereading this one book and it's really powerful. And Robert Redford also had been moved by that book when it came out in the 70s. And the story is that he was handing that book out to folks in the 70s. And Mary Berry tells this hilarious story about how, you know, Tanya, Wendell's wife, because I think Robert Redford called him. They tell the story much better than I, but it was really awesome. I think Robert Redford called Wendell, and Tanya had him on the phone and called out to Wendell, like, you know, Robert Redford's on the phone. And he said, you know, who? Robert who? He didn't know. You know, it's not why he's doing it. And but it shows you how far-reaching that work has been. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. I mean, you read it today, and as Wendell would say, you know, sadly, it's all the more relevant today than it was, you know, 40 years ago.
He's a seer.
Yeah, truly. Yeah.
Well, I'm excited about the film being here tonight. We've still got a few more minutes left, so I'm happy for us to continue to talk about it and use the time to do so. But in downtown Lexington at the beautiful Kentucky Theater, which I don't believe you've been to, Laura and Jeff, is that true?
I have not been there. No. Jeff, we haven't.
No, it's a treasure.
Built in 1927.
I've said to Laura and Jeff, and it's so true, Lexington is so excited for this film to come. Yes. I mean, it is a buzz, and we're really grateful to you to have us on your stop before there's any sort of release or anything like that.
Very exciting. So,
thank you.
I've got this kind of nagging question that and it could be true it could be often true in what you do, or maybe never true, or maybe you've had to get over it. I don't know, but I can't help but wonder how much you want Wendell to like what you make.
Yeah, so that's good. Well, honestly, I was so grateful because we did a screening here, a private screening on Tuesday, and Tanya Berry came, and, you know, I got a little choked up and beforehand just thanking her because she really was the one who invited me to come back and supported me and trusted me with this project. And it was just so such a privilege, you know, that I can't say that enough. I mean, folks are thanking us and we're encouraged and I'm so happy to hear that. But I think really the gratitude is ours because just the privilege of working in the wake of such amazing and inspiring folks and learning from them and being changed by them. And so I think for me, you know, I don't know about Wendell. I would hope that he would understand that how much we admire his work and how much we're in it for the right reasons. But I think as long as Tanya's okay with things, mm-hmm. as long as she feels good about it,
yeah.
then to me that is, you know, the ultimate success. So.
If I may read between the lines here, and it wouldn't be that unusual for this to be true for Wendell Berry. Am I possibly hearing you say that Wendell may not see it?
I don't know if he will. He saw, I know that he did see a 22-minute version of the film. Oh. And yeah, I think he's seen it. I know he's seen it more than once, and I was told that he was quite moved by it.
Great.
So that may be enough for him, you
right.
know?
Right.
I actually had the thought, and maybe you've had the thought too, that you could just send him an audio file. Because it is no seriously, it is so there's so much richness in the audio, and
yeah.
I mean, you'd miss all of Lee Daniels' beautiful cinematography and you know all of these things, but
and
essence
Jim
is,
Hall's photos.
Oh right, which, well yeah,
but yeah,
but the essence would be there, and maybe he'd be willing.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea.
Did you? Well, I love that. I don't know. For some reason, I have to mention. I'm so fond, in some ways, of Wendell Berry's. You know, arguably, sort of curmudgeonly holding on to just sort of an abstinence from extremely modern media. Did you? I don't know if you saw a copy of Guy Mendes's photo book, the portrait book that Guy Mendes
yes.
made.
Yes,
and Wendell's intro to that book, where he wrote the intro to that book, or the preface, and and I was so delighted and tickled by it as a photographer myself, when he basically kind of expressed his displeasure at anyone ever showing him the back of a digital camera, you know, where you take a picture and then you show someone the picture, you're like, here, look at the picture I just took of you, and how Wendell kind of gave the indication that that was like seconds of his life that he would never get back, like having to look at that.
I just Instagrammed you, man.
Well, I think we're gonna. I think there's just gonna be an outpouring of big hearts tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I look forward to sharing.
And I don't
that.
Think that we have said yet that Laura and I believe Jeff and Mary will be talking afterwards. So if you're listening and have some more questions after seeing the film,
oh yeah, good. So there'll be yeah. okay. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if anyone's told yeah. Nick Offerman about this, the comedian. He's a huge Wendell Berry fan. When he was at the Singletary Center here a few months ago, I went and saw him, and he talked about Wendell Berry a while during that show. He really loves Wendell Berry.
You know, actually, the Louisville premiere, believe it or not,
oh, okay.
just 2 days ago. He's a big fan. You're right.
Yeah.
He's a co-producer yeah. of our film.
Oh, so, well, yeah. there you go.
Okay, yeah, that yeah. makes sense.
He's done fundraisers, yeah, and he's come to several screenings.
And one more bit of trivia, actually, because your show is Trivial Thursday. What is it called?
Yeah, Trivial Thursdays. Yeah. We sometimes barely get around to some trivia.
Well, there's a moment in the film where Wendell's talking about making things.
Oh, yeah.
He's talking about whether you're making a stool or you're making a film. You know, there's a process, but in that moment, there's a cutaway to somebody who's been carving a stool, hand carving a stool, and even though you never see his face, it's actually Nick Offerman. It's Nick Offerman himself.
All right.
He's a very accomplished woodworker. So we asked him if he'd be willing to do that, and he said he'd love to do it. fact, if anybody's listening and interested, I think it's the Men's Journal interview he did recently. If you Google Nick Offerman, Wendell Berry, Men's Journal, you'll be able to read his comments about making school and being in the film. It's cool.
How cool.
He's been a big supporter.
Great.
Thanks, you guys, so much for calling in with us, and I look forward to tonight, and best wishes to you all. I think I found a good song for us to go out with. We've just got a couple minutes left in the show, and I'm going to play Trouble in the Fields, the Nancy Griffith song, since she's from Austin. You guys are from Austin, and there's, I don't know, I feel like there's kind of a nice little way to put a bow on this, perhaps, a little bit
perfect.
Of that.
Before. Love it. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for being on Trivial Thursdays. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Sarah Wiley, thanks for being here. Leaf, thanks for being here. We will catch you next time. That's it for Trivial Thursdays this week. And I'm going to send you out with some Nancy Griffith.